Is everybody ready? Bring your cookies and cakes and have a seat. I don't know. Oh, it's hiding over there somewhere. Yeah. Okay, who would like to hear part B of Donna's testimony? I don't think we have a quorum, sweetie. Sorry. Okay. I'll have to just keep teaching. I'll try that again. Who would like to hear part B of Donna's testimony? Yeah, okay. And we have at least 70% there. Here we go.
Well, it might have been a little confusing for some of you when I was sharing because, you know, you see Ross and I together. We're obviously married. And when I was called to China, I had not met him yet. So I was still single. And I went to the mission field as a single woman. Now, I also mentioned that I was over 40 when this all happened. Now, I had read that the likelihood of a woman over 40 finding a husband was, the odds were greater being kidnapped by a terrorist than finding a husband. So that's just reality. But also I had read in preparing for the mission field that if a woman goes to the mission field as a single person, she just had to accept that for the rest of her life because the odds of finding a husband on the mission field were just minuscule. Because there's a lot of, if you'll notice, there are a lot of single women on the field. There's not very many single men. Men just don't quite have it, you know, to be able to go by themselves. So, anyway, I went. And, you know, and that really wasn't a factor in my thinking. But I was in Kunming, China, where we live now together. And my church told me I needed to go to this missionary training program in Australia that was run by the Australian Assemblies of God called World Harvest Institute. And and the class, I think, was December, January. Now in China, December, January, that's the middle of winter, very cold. And I had an opportunity to go to Sydney in December, January. So I thought, that doesn't really sound too bad. And so I obediently went, because my church told me to Sydney. And Ross just happened to be the director of that program. And so we met. Now, I felt early on, now the course is only 2 months long, so it's not like I have a lot of time there. And I felt kind of early on that God was speaking to me about Ross. But, you know, I didn't do anything because that's his job. And so I didn't, like, do anything. And he didn't do anything either. And he's told me later there was some attraction there, but he knew it would be complicated. I'm an American living in China. He's Australian. You know, he's based in Sydney. And so that probably wasn't a real good combination. And so even though he didn't ask me out. So I'm going through this 2 months thinking God has spoken to me about him, but he never asked me out. And so I had accepted that fact, and I thought, well, I'm just going back to China, and maybe we'll keep in touch, and maybe something will happen later. Well, a week before graduation, he finally asked me out. And so we go out Saturday night, and we go out Sunday night, and Sunday night, he starts talking marriage. So I'm thinking he's really, really slow, and then he's really, really fast. And so we date that final week of the course, and then we have the graduation on a Friday night. Now, this graduation, there's a lot of pastors who come from the area, and it was held at at then Southern Cross College, and you have the staff coming and students and Teen Challenge because they're there. And in the handing out the certificates, which he hands out along with the president of World Missions, it's an alphabetical order. Well, he skips me. He doesn't give me my call my name. And I'm so stupid, I don't realize that he has something else in mind. And I thought, oh, that's unusual. And he said, well, that's all the certificates. And I'm still sitting there. And he said, oh, wait a minute, there's one more here. And he calls me up. And he announces, I am the recipient of the Director's Award. Now, there is no Director's Award. He's just making this up. But I don't know. I don't know what's going on. I'm just standing there. And he says, you know, he starts naming all these positive things about me, you know, like I'm the winner of this award because of my character and grade point average and personality. I'm not sure what all. But anyway, I win because of all these things. And I'm just going along. And then he said, in fact, I think I like everything about Donna. This is what he's saying to the group, except her last name. Now, the people, my friends in the audience, they think, well, that's not a very nice thing for him to say. And then he asked me to marry him in front of everyone. And I'm in shock. And the audience is standing up and cheering and clapping, and I'm just standing there, and because I'm in shock. He knows better now than to surprise me. I'm really not good with surprises. But so that's how we got together. Now, that was a Friday night. Sunday morning, early Sunday morning, I got on a plane and went back to China because that was the plan. I mean, I already had my ticket. We decided we would get married, which was not real simple because I was living in China, he was in Australia, and legally we could not get married in China because we're not Chinese. And to get married in Australia, I'd have to go back to Australia for a month. I didn't have time. I had a team coming. You know, yeah, you have all these things scheduled. And then he had to be in the Philippines. So we even had trouble finding time to try and get married legally somewhere. Which was a requirement that my pastor made. You know, we just couldn't have a ceremony. We had to have the official registration. So a month after graduation, we met in Bangkok, where we could be legally married, and we were officially declared married in a dingy government office. They just stamped some papers and handed them to us and didn't even look at us, but we're married. Then we flew back to Kunming, which is where I was living, and my pastor came over from the U.S. and performed the Christian ceremony in my apartment in Kunming. And we were there for 2 weeks, and then he went off to the Philippines, and I stayed in Kunming. And then I had my passport stolen, and so we had a few little problems. But eventually, I joined him in the Philippines and pretty much been together ever since. Yeah.
So that's how you do it.
Oh, I forgot one thing. You know, I had single friends back in my home church who really wanted to get married, and they said, well, when I get married, then I'll go to the mission field. And they're still single.
Yeah. It's a hard act to follow, really. I'm not sure where to go now. Yeah. Yeah. So we've been married 12 years now. So wonderful to serve the Lord with a good partner. So any single ladies here looking for a husband, go to the mission field. That's the lesson, I think. Okay. All right. Well, just going to continue. We're going to have more of a China focus in this session. We were talking in the last session more generically about the challenge of missions, but want to kind of focus in a little bit on China. Let me just give you a quick rundown of where China has come from. We've got the isms. Is isms, the isms of China. It's interesting to note that that 2,500 years ago, the emperor of China worshipped Shangdi, which means the heavenly emperor. And he they had a monotheistic concept of one God, and there were no images, no idols to him. And it's interesting because if you read through the early chapters of Genesis, Genesis chapter 11, where the Tower of Babel and people scattered throughout the nations, obviously some people migrated to China and started developing their written language, the pictogram, the Chinese characters, very ancient. And if you look at them now, a lot of them depict a lot of the events that happened around about the Tower of Babel. And so you can see the gospel in these characters. You can see redemptive analogy that God has placed in these Chinese characters. For example, the character for boat is a vessel and eight people in the vessel. Does that sound familiar? How many people were in the ark? There was who? Noah, his wife, what was her name? Joan of Arc, yeah. And they're... And their three children and their children's wives. So you've got, is that eight? Yeah, close enough. And so, you know, where did that come from? Why did the Chinese have a character of a boat with eight people in it to depict that concept? The Chinese character for righteousness is a pictogram of a lamb and the personal pronoun I or me under the lamb. So me under the lamb equals righteousness. Where did that come from? Well, we know God placed those seeds, and there's whole studies done on the ancient Chinese pictograms and characters that depict the message of redemption starting from the Garden of Eden right through. So a very interesting study. So there was a monotheistic concept of God thousands and thousands of years ago in China, but that's been diluted and changed through the centuries. So you have monotheism firstly, then you have animism. Anyone know what animism is? It's a generic sort of concept. It's a belief in the spirit world where impersonal spirits control every aspect of life. And if you are able to manipulate this impersonal spiritual power, you can do that for your own benefit through magic, through curses, through divination and other such things. So it's often been called folk religion, there's another term, but it's this whole animistic concept has crept in into the Chinese understanding of the spirit world. Okay, so after animism came Confucianism, which today is a religion, and they venerate Confucius as the founder of that. But actually, he was not a religious man at all. It was a moral, social philosophy, all about filial piety, how to relate to your parents, how to relate to society, how to be a good person, basically, was Confucius' teaching. Then Taoism by Lao Tzu was the founder of that. Some people say he never really existed. There's not enough proof that this guy even existed. But certainly, even if he didn't, the teaching of Taoism has continued. This took more of one aspect of looking at nature worship, another aspect looking at the whole spiritual, metaphysical side of life. So these two happened about the same time, about 500 BC. Okay, then Buddhism came later. Buddhism was established in India and eventually found its way into China. What you find now, like I have a Chinese friend and I said, are you a Christian friend? I said, are your parents Buddhist? She said, yes. I said, well, what about Confucianism? Yes, they're Confucianists. What about Taoism? Yeah, they're Taoists as well. So there's no contradiction in their mind because Confucianism relates to this aspect of life. This aspect of life is dealt with by Taoism, and et cetera, et cetera. So they don't see the contradiction in that. They just amalgamate that all into one belief system. Then comes communism, 1949, and basically says there is no God, following Karl Marx's quotations that religion is the opiate of the people. And so they sought to do away with all religious understanding and just have a secular state where the state is placed above the family, which is very un-Chinese. Okay, next one. Then you have postmodernism, secularism, where people just live for today. No concept, no understanding of the spiritual world. They've moved beyond that. Okay. And now we have this, I guess the greatest challenge for the church in China, we could say, is not persecution, although it does happen, but it's materialism. And this is a growing problem for the church, where people are seeking earthly treasures rather than heavenly ones. They've been through all the tough times, and now people can have stuff. You know, in our little provincial city, there are Lamborghinis, Maseratis, and a lot of young people with incredible disposable income. They call them the Ka-ching dynasty. Ka-ching! Yeah. And so this is just an overview of where China has come through the years. Several years ago, I was in a church, and there was a little Chinese girl there, and she had somehow lost her parents, and she was walking around trying to find them and crying. And I looked at her, and the Lord spoke to me and said, "That's China. That's China." Just like that little girl who once was together with her Heavenly Father. And now she's wandered away through all this maze of isms, and is just lost. But then the Lord said, but just as the prodigal son came back to the Father, I'm drawing her back to myself. And that, to me, that was a great encouragement, because that's what we're seeing. We're seeing such hunger and such openness to the gospel in these days. But there's always these attractions and distractions trying to pull people away from finding truth. I think I probably mentioned when I was here with you last time about an experience I had. I was on an airplane, and I was traveling a domestic flight within China, and the flight attendant came over to me and says, "What would you like to drink, sir?" And I said, "I'll have some living water, please." And he said, "Pardon me? What would you like to drink?" I said, "Some living water." He said, "So you mean like carbonated, sort of, was that what you mean?" I said, "No, just living water." He says, "I don't understand, what is this living water?" And I said, "Well, it's the water that you drink and you're never thirsty again." He said, "Wow, that's like magic." I said, "Well, it's amazing, but it's not magic." And he said, "Well, where do you get this living water from?" I said, "Come a bit closer." I said, "Jesus." And he walked away. I've blown it. Anyway, he came back about 15 minutes later, and he said, "Tell me more about this living water. I'm very interested." I said, "Well, you know, Jesus offers you living water. He's offering you an experience with him where you are satisfied, you are filled, you feel complete and fulfilled, and there's no emptiness in your life anymore, and he gives you life abundantly here and eternal life in heaven." And he walked away again. Then he came back later and he said, "I want some of this living water. Can you tell me, how do I get it?" And so I shared with him again, and he wrote me a little note. Well, he said, "Can you get me a Bible so I can learn more about this?" And I said, "Well, if you give me your email address, then I'll make sure you get a Bible." So he came back and he had a little note there, and he says, "My name is Mr. Wang, and I want to know God because I believe he can make me a better man." Well, that's pretty good, you know, and it just spoke to me again that there is a hunger. There is an openness. People are disillusioned with a lot of the things they're seeing in life. And there is a tremendous openness. And Don and I are thrilled to be in China at this time, doing what God has called us to do. And we really appreciate the partnership that we have with City Life Church as well, because reality is we couldn't do it without you guys partnering with us, and we appreciate that so much. What time are we finishing? 11 o'clock. 11:30. Thanks, John. Good man. Okay. Let me just give you another quick snapshot of the history of the church in China since 1779 up until now. We can probably skip the next slide and go on to the following one. There we go. Okay, let's hold it there. Okay, so from 49 till 69 was the era of the greatest persecution in China, where people were incarcerated, they were tortured in prison for years and years, murdered in some situations. Now, people will tell you, no, that never happened, but it did. I know people, personal friends that have been in prison, others that have been prodded with, what do they call them, cattle prods, where you don't want to be prodded, and just, you know, torture and suffering. They've had all of that. It's not as strong now, but it still is happening. And so this was the era of the greatest persecution. It was what they called the Great Leap Forward, which Mao Zedong established, where he wanted to industrialize the whole of China. He established communal farms as well. And basically, a lot of that were failed projects. And during that time, a great drought happened as well. Not drought, a great famine, just because of mismanagement, taking all the crops and not having a good strategy in developing that. And so between, some say 16 million people, some say 30 million people died as a result of this great famine, just because of some of the dumb decisions that were made. One of them was, Mao said, kill all the birds because they're parasites. So kill all the birds. They eat the grain. You know, that's the problem. It's not my decisions. The birds are the problem. And so then people started wondering why there were so many bugs and grubs around. Why was that? Because the birds were not eating them. He didn't understand the ecological process, obviously. And so too many bugs and grubs, so we get the pesticide and spray everything, and then people started dying because of the excessive pesticide that they use. So it's more like the Great Leap backwards during this time. Then came the Cultural Revolution in 66 through to 76, where Mao felt that certain bourgeois influences were infiltrating the government, and so they need to purge that. And so even top leaders were taken away to concentration camps, re-education camps. And so you have what's called the Cultural Revolution, to make it Chinese, to make it secular, without any Western and any religious influence. So many, many Christians were killed during this time as well, during the Cultural Revolution. The Red Guard, which were the young people that were so zealous for Mao, that went all over China, often murdering people, sometimes even their own parents. So it was a terrible time of persecution. Then came 69 to 89, this next 20-year period, was the growth, incredible growth of the rural church, the underground house church networks, which some of them are like 10 million members in one house church network. And these are the ones that we're working with. They're underground because they're not registered, they're not recognized by the government. And but this was a tremendous time of growth. And part of it was because of Deng Xiaoping, who was one of Mao's successors as the chairman of China, had this open door policy. In other words, open the door to the rest of the world as far as trade and that sort of thing. And that had a positive impact towards the church as well, where China started to think, well, these Christians, they're not so bad. Now, we still need to control them, but there wasn't as strong a persecution. Then the Three Self Patriotic Movement, which is often called the Three Self Church. It's called Three Self because definition is it's an indigenous church. It's self-propagating, self-administrating, and self-supporting. And so they say this is the real Chinese church, but really it's a puppet of the Chinese government. And so people that lead this church are told by the government, you have to go to this seminary where we teach you what you can talk about. You can't talk about the resurrection of Christ. You can't talk about the second coming of Christ. You can't talk about the kingdom of God. But other stuff, no problem, which just takes the heart out of the gospel. We have no resurrection. We have no hope. We have no gospel. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody in the Three Self Church refrains from teaching these issues. Some do. But that certainly is the party line. So this is a time of great growth of the rural church. And then the next 20-year phase is 89 to 2009. This is when we see the emergence of the urban church in China. Prior to that, mainly in the rural areas. And it began the time at Tiananmen Square. Remember the massacre there, where people were demonstrating, wanting democracy? And during this time, people started to get very disillusioned with the government. You know, how could the government do that to these people? They're just expressing their opinion. And this was a time of disillusionment, a time where young professionals began to question many, many things in life. It was a time when many people studied in other countries, studied abroad and came back and started to question things. And this all resulted in a seeking for faith and an emergence of the urban church in China. So the question is, where now? What's going to happen the next 20 years? And we're already well into that, of course. But when we look at, that's the macro picture. As we look at the micro picture, in other words, what is our individual response to that, to what God is doing in China, we would probably say one of the most effective strategic things that we can do is leadership training. And Pastor John was with us a few weeks ago doing just that in our Emerging Leaders Training Program. Now, next. Okay, so leadership training programs that we run for senior leaders, for emerging leaders. Another area is a focus on the urban challenge. Some time ago, I felt very strongly that the answer to China is the youth and the cities. And there are great challenges for the urbanization of China. It's the greatest mass migration in history, in living history, is happening in China right now. Over the last 10 years, 100 million people have moved from the rural areas into the urban areas of China. And you know that's got to produce a lot of change. It's going to produce a lot of social issues, a lot of social problems. And so there are great opportunities for the church because of this shift and this state of flux that it's in at the moment. So we're seeking to get as much traction out of that as possible by some of the things that we're doing that I'll explain in a moment. Another response of the Chinese church in this 20-year period is called the Back to Jerusalem movement. Have you heard of that? Some haven't. Sometimes it's just called B2J, Back to Jerusalem. Donna's going to share a little bit about that now.
The Back to Jerusalem movement actually began back in the 1920s, 1930s, when the Chinese, when they read the Bible, Acts 1:8, it talks about you will be my disciples, go to Jerusalem, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth, or the othermost parts of the earth. And when the Chinese read that, at that time it was written, China was the ends of the earth. So what the concept that began in the 20s and 30s was, well, then it's our role when the gospel comes now to China, to the ends of the earth, we need to then take it back along the old Silk Road, the way the gospel came to China, and take it back to Jerusalem. So that's where that terminology comes from. Now, the problem is that it was just beginning to be spread, that idea, when World War II broke out and then the communists took over China in 1949. And all the missionaries were kicked out and the church went underground and they were struggling to survive. So that movement, that concept of sending out missionaries to go back to Jerusalem, that kind of died too. And then probably within maybe a little more than 10 years ago, that idea started resurfacing, you know, that that's something that the Chinese church, you know, as they're developing and maturing, they need to send out missionaries too. And so that's what these networks have been working on for the past several years, is sending out missionaries. And a lot of times people are surprised by that because they think, you know, we're still sending missionaries to China, you know, that they're not ready to mature enough to be sending out their own missionaries, but they really want to be a part of that. And they really do respect and honor missionaries who have come to China. You know, they realize, you know, they appreciate that sacrifice. So they want to also do that as well. Doesn't mean everyone is behind the movement, because you also have, just like you have here, you have people in the church who said, oh, well, there's enough to do here at home. You know, we don't need to be sending people to other countries. So they're dealing with a lot of the same issues that we deal with here. But one particular problem they have is they don't have a history of, you know, Western nations, we've been sending out missionaries for literally hundreds of years. We've learned a lot. And they don't have that history. Everything's new to them. So they recognize the need. They need some help as far as, you know, how do they do this? How do they send out missionaries? How do they prepare them to go to a different culture and minister? So that was actually the original reason that Ross and I went to China, was to help them send out missionaries, help the church send out missionaries. Even though it's a huge challenge for them, they're doing it. And they're doing it quite successfully, as far as when you think of all the Muslim countries in that part of the world who don't, the Chinese can go in there much easier than we as Westerners can, because they, quite frankly, they hate us. And they're not very receptive. So the Chinese are much less threatening to them. And so they really are the perfect people to go to that part of the world.
Yeah. So we, the missionary training program that we've established there, some of the graduates are working in areas like Egypt, Israel, Jordan, Bangladesh, India, Malaysia, Thailand, and everywhere in between. Some time ago, we had a message from one of the young ladies that went to Egypt, and she said, I've just won a Muslim professor to Christ. And like Donna's saying, you know, we're already two strikes down when we interact with Muslims. There's already, you know, below zero kind of credibility, but the Chinese just kind of slip under the radar there and go about their things as they do, and able to just share the gospel with Muslim people. So, yeah, we are very honored to be part of what's happening there. Okay, so that's back to Jerusalem. One of the major focuses and challenges, again, is the youth of China. There is a common youth culture all around the world. You go to any university in the world, and you'll see a lot of the same stuff. People with their baseball hats on backwards, and, you know, listening to Lady Gaga or whatever. There's just a universal youth culture. Yeah, there's a lot of differences, of course, but a lot of the needs are very similar. And so some time ago, Donna and I were wondering, you know, just wouldn't it be great if there was like a national youth movement, you know, of young believers on fire for God, worshiping God, and we're just believing for that to happen. But we never saw anyone really doing anything about it, and we were wondering why. And then God kind of tapped us on the shoulder, and we said, you must be joking. And the challenge was to do youth concerts in the great cities around China. And we thought, youth concerts, youth, that means you should be young, right? It's not happening. Concerts, that means you need to be musical. No, it's not kind of working. And we're kind of working through the logic of it. Just didn't make sense. But, and obviously, we don't do the concerts, but God was just prompting us to help facilitate that, because we saw a great opportunity for the young people of Australia, musicians, worship bands, to engage with the young people in China, believers and non-believers in the universities. And so we started that about 2 years ago, and we've been able to do these youth concerts in many, many cities throughout China. Now, the way, obviously, you know, we don't come in and say we're going to do a Christian concert for you guys in this university, otherwise we wouldn't get very far. But we just say, we label it, we promote it as culture exchange. So we have these young people from Australia, they love China, they want to learn about China, and we're going to present modern Western music concerts and just have a bit of fun, get the Chinese guys up to do karaoke with us and a dance competition, Gangnam style or whatever, you know, just to interact with them. So the purpose of this is pre-evangelism. Because if you don't do the pre-evangelism well, your evangelism doesn't work very well. So all we're doing really is building bridges of understanding, changing attitudes, changing the atmosphere. And so we do Christian songs, but they're not overtly Christian. And we do some secular songs that are, you know, wholesome secular songs. But it's just wild, just goes off. And the Chinese young people, who you think very reserved, are not at all. They're just, you know, they're going off the deep end. And so we just do that to make friends. Then we say, if you enjoyed this concert, you would like to keep in touch with us and hear about the next concert we're having, please fill in this response card. And so they do, and then we have a concert in a hotel, which is more controlled by us, and it's full on. Preach the gospel, worship, pray for the sick, give altar calls, see people come to Christ. And so it's very, very encouraging to do that. So the first part, the big concert, just making friends. And then through that, we just feed them into these other more Christian concerts. And we had one recently in the city that we're in Kunming, and there was a manager who was there watching what was going on, one of the managers of the hotel. And because it's highly, everything we do is highly illegal. We're criminals, really. This is being recorded, isn't it? Sorry about that. Just joking. No. And anyway, he was standing at the back through this whole concert, and it was wild. You know, we had Holy Ghost conga lines and, you know, people getting saved and everything was happening. And he was like this. You know, he's not enjoying this. And then towards the end of the meeting, he came over and he said, one of our workers came to me and said, the manager, he wants to talk to you. I said, here, it's shutdown time. He's going to shut us down, kick us out or call the police or something, because they can get into big trouble letting us use a hotel room for that sort of thing. I said, what did he want? And he said, the worker said, he wants to know what he has to do to become a Christian. And I said, wow, that's not what I expected. So anyway, I went over and we prayed with him and led him to Christ. And I said, just out of curiosity, Mr. Lee, what was it that drew you to want to become a Christian? He said, this atmosphere, it's amazing. I've never seen such joy and such peace and life in my entire life. I want some of that. And so that's what we're seeing, people just hungry for God. We got a short DVD. Would you like to see it? You sure? Okay.
China as a nation is becoming increasingly urbanized. With a strong church presence.
Crank up the tunes.
One of the church's greatest challenges now is reaching the urban centers, and in particular, their youth. Today's youth have made a dramatic shift away from the traditions of their parents and previous generations. They are educated, progressive in their thinking, and have high disposable incomes. Chinese youth are openly searching for meaning, growing up in what social writers have described as a moral vacuum. They are turning to global youth culture and pop music culture to fill it.
This has presented us with a tremendous opportunity to engage and connect with Chinese young people through the medium of modern Western music. We want to change the atmosphere of this nation. We want to change the perception that Christianity is just a code of ethics, that it's just formal and traditional. And we want young people to see and experience the life of Christianity, that it's exciting, it's relevant, and speaks to the issues that they face every day in modern China.
Over the last year, youth concerts have been held in major cities around the country.
These concerts have been packing out theatres and music venues with thousands of Chinese youth. Young Australian musicians are bringing a message of hope and joy to these events.
It's vitally important that we reach the young people of China today. They will be the influencers of this next generation, and they will be the architects of the modern China. This is a fantastic opportunity for the Australian Church to engage with our work here in China. Young Aussie musicians and singers can present Christianity and Christian values in culturally relevant ways. They just attract the Chinese young people so much, so easily, because of their shared interest in global youth culture and the common language of music.
Young Australian singers and musicians are modelling this style of outreach to Chinese musicians and singers and imparting the skills to them so they can replicate this model throughout the country. These young Chinese now have a vision of how they can use their music to reach the millions of youth in this country and assist the church to develop a contemporary expression relevant to China's exploding urban centres.
For the many years that we've been in China and the different ways that we have assisted the Chinese church and the Chinese people, I believe this is the most strategic initiative and has the potential to be the most impacting.
That's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So we're thrilled to be part of many facets of what God's doing in China. Just a little bit here and there, but we're enjoying it. God's blessing, and you're partnering with us. So thank you for that. What I'd like to do now for the last section of this session is maybe have some questions and possibly some answers. So if you've got any questions about anything that you've seen or heard today, or something you've been thinking about related to missions, now's your chance. Yes. Kingdom of God. Yeah. Well, let me just back up a little bit. There's three expressions of the church in China. One is the underground house church movement, which is by far the largest expression of the church in China. It started in rural areas, but it's also in the cities now as well. So that's one. Then there's the emerging urban church, which is gaining a lot of momentum in the cities around the nation. The network churches, the underground churches, are more hierarchical, where you have Uncle so-and-so who's responsible for these 10 million people, and he's the boss, and he has people under him. But in the urban churches, it's probably more like church as we're used to, where it's more, well, this church here relates to this church, and we'll do some things together, or we won't do some things together. And it's more independent, I guess, but relational rather than hierarchical. And then you have the three self patriotic movement, the three self government church. So it's that church that the government controls the agenda. And if someone teaches something that the government disagrees with, they will lose their job. They may go to prison, they may not, just depends on where they are. It's more to do with the local authorities, how they perceive it, and what their relationship is with that church. Yeah, so it's. I can't give you a simple answer because China's not simple. Well, they won't allow you to do evangelism. They won't allow you to do missions. These are other areas. They won't allow you to teach people that are under 18 years of age, which is a good way of causing the church to die out, isn't it? And that's the agenda.
What you just have to keep in mind is the government runs, obviously, the government church. The government is communist. So you have communists overseeing that church. So they're not going to do anything that's really going to help the church. You know, I mean, their goal would be to destroy it. But it's more of a propaganda thing where they can say then, oh, we allow Christianity.
Yes. They say, look, we have these churches. Now, there are nowhere near enough of the three self churches to accommodate all the believers in China, but they, what they say is there is freedom of religion in China. There is. You can believe whatever you like, but there is not freedom of religious practice. There's just freedom of religious belief. Think whatever you like, feel whatever you like, but don't meet together and don't do these things together. So that's the situation in China. Yeah, and you know, it's been said that whatever you hear about China is probably true somewhere in China. It's a huge nation, 1.5 billion people, and there is 500 different people groups. Cultural identities vary all over the nation. In this area, there'll be strong persecution. This area, there'll be no persecution. There'll be relative freedom. Next week, that'll change. You know, so it's just in a state of flux. They've just handed over the reins to the new chairman. Who knows? You know, people are speculating and prophesying and everything. But in the end, no one really knows what's going to happen. But we just have to work while it's still day, because night might be coming. Yes.
Does that freedom of religion, in inverted commas, apply to other religions as well in China? Like, because there would be Buddhists and Muslims, and are they allowed to practice their religion?
Well, Buddhism is seen as a Chinese religion, so they're far more tolerant towards Buddhism, and Buddhism is not evangelistic at all. You know, Buddhists could care less whether you convert to Buddhism. It's just too complicated. They probably hope you don't. And it doesn't matter, because all roads lead to God anyway, is their perspective. Now, Islam, there are more than 20 million of Muslim, of just the Uyghur people in China. Then you have the Hui Muslims, a lot of different Muslim groups. They can have their own mosques. They're seen as more of a threat to the Chinese government, not because of the religion, but because of the political background to that all, because the Uyghurs want to secede and to be part of their own nation or part of Kazakhstan, Central Asia. So you've got more political issues with Islam. But you know, they do have mosques. There are Buddhist temples. Christianity is probably seen as the biggest threat, in the sense of something that they just can't control. And that's the buzzword for the Chinese government. We must control. And when you've got a nation of 1.5 billion people, you really can't afford to lose control. It would just be chaos. And so they keep a tight rein on things. Yeah, good question. Thank you. Yes, John. Yes. It's plateaued to some degree. I mean, it's kept up with the birth rate, but this is what their leaders are telling me. They kind of lost some of the fire. You know, when they were being persecuted, they were more zealous, and they were more bold and seeing people saved. And another factor is, during that time, no one had a lot of money, didn't have enough money to go to the hospitals and doctors. So, God heal me, you know. They relied on miracles and healing just to live, basically. Whereas now that's changed. So that they themselves say that they've lost some of their fire. And one of the other issues is, because of the urbanization, many of the people in their churches have moved to the cities, and they've kind of haven't found a church there, and kind of fallen between the cracks. And because the urban church and the rural church are quite different. So there's a lot of those challenges that have slowed the momentum down. And I think the key is the young people. This next generation is the real key for China. Yeah.
Is there much freedom in television and radio for preaching the gospel?
No. Any more questions? No. No, that's carefully monitored. Even, you know, on cable satellite TV that comes from overseas, it's edited, it's monitored. They don't want, it's the whole Western democratic system, they are just trying to protect their people from that because they don't want demonstrations. Yes.
But now if you look under Google in China, you won't find it. But you find it in every other Google, so I suppose it's even Google's.
Yeah, they try to kind of not remember that part of their culture, yeah, their history. Yes. They do have Sunday schools. It's not strong. A lot of places, everybody's in the same room. You know, they don't cater too much to the specific needs of children in the areas of Christian education. It's happening, but it's a little slow. So bless you guys as you go over and do some of that stuff. Yeah, because they do need help in that area. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, Trudy.
Think of all our missionaries in a personal way. So my question is for you and Donna both, is there some particular direction you could give us in our prayers for you and our thoughts for you that we could just be personal in our prayers and not just as a project but as people?
Okay, thank you. Everybody hear that okay? Yeah. Yeah, areas to pray for. One is survival. I mean, in one sense, China now is not a difficult place to live. There's certain things you can't get that you want from back here, etc. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. But it's just becoming more challenging in other areas, dealing with the government. I'm talking about the areas that we're involved in. We have to deal with the Department of Education. We have to deal with different universities to do these concerts, and it's amazing how much bureaucracy and red tape you've just got to wade your way through. It takes months and months and months to do like 5 days of concerts in the university. So, it's a tough gig. So just prayer that in China, it's all relationships. You know, it's not technical know-how, it's technical know-who. So it's if you know the right person that can just connect you to this person, then things will go very smoothly. And we're still trying to find those people that we can connect with and build relationships with. So that would help us a lot, that one. Yeah. Anything on a personal level?
Well, just to add to what Ross said, I think we have to deal with a lot of opposition, you know, opposition that may manifest itself in certain ways, but it's Satan is behind it all. So I think as far as being able to overcome that opposition and having open doors, that's what we need. Personally, I think health, good health, because I seem to have a lot of physical issues sometimes.
Good question. Thank you. Appreciate your prayers for all of those areas because, the enemy will use anything to try and bring you down. We have a question over here, do we? I'll let you know in a couple of years. I went to university for about 12 months. That's how I got my visa as a student visa. That wasn't full-time, it was part-time, and learned the rudimentary aspects of Chinese language, and then it's just every year you're just building and building on that. I mean, when I was in Thailand, I was there for 11 years, and I was preaching after 12 months, and then I thought, well, you know, come to China, Chinese can't be that much harder, but I forgot this. I was 20 years older for a start, and we pretty well hit the ground running. You know, we had programs up and running. Whereas in Thailand, really the first 18 months was just focused on language. China was not like that. So I found it more difficult, you know, to learn Chinese than I did Thai. So it's a work in progress. Yeah, younger people tend to learn a lot quicker. I'd say, you know, just getting around, 6 to 8 months, basic conversational Chinese, but again, you continue to build on that. Yeah. Let me just say, as we kind of wrap this session up, a couple of quotes. One is, this is by Lausanne Conference, and they said, missions is the whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. And I like that, because it covers what missions really is. It's the whole church. It's not just the missionary, the whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. Does that mean that every Christian should be a missionary? No. Otherwise, who would support the missionaries? So I think it was Peter Wagner said this. Once we say that every Christian is a missionary, you've heard that? Well, we're all missionaries. Once you say every Christian is a missionary, it's only a matter of time before no one is a missionary. Why? Because we're making it so general. Well, we're all missionaries, then why would you want to go overseas then? If I'm a missionary, I can just stay here. Plenty of work to do in my own backyard. And so there's no specific focus on the missionary call. How do we kind of reconcile all of this together? Well, to me, it's no, not every Christian is a missionary in the cross-cultural sense of the word, but every believer must be involved in the mission. They must be involved in fulfilling the great commission that Jesus gave to us. Matthew 28 is not the great suggestion, it's the great commission. And it was not given to missionaries, it was given to the church, is that right? So it's the church's responsibility to reach the world, and that part of that is sending full-time missionaries to unreached people groups and different nations of the world. Part of it is praying for those nations, praying for the people that are sent. Part of it is supporting the people that are being sent, or projects, or sending teams over like you're doing. So it's all part of fulfilling the Great Commission. So it's not Donna and I doing it, it's not you doing it, but together as a partnership, yeah, we can do great things for God. So for me, missions is all about partnerships. It's not about lone rangers. It's not about, you know, a church just doing their own thing or a missionary doing their own thing. It's about a partnership in the gospel, in the fellowship of the gospel, to reach the world. Thank you very much for having us today. We've enjoyed it immensely and look forward to sharing with you tomorrow in the sessions as well. God bless you.